the material world. The tendency is that we form an exclusive club for ourselves. Now, that club may be there by Lord Chaitanya's arrangement, but it should never be there by our own thoughts and feelings. Otherwise, we will not be able to accommodate it.
Could I suggest that the answer to the question is that we can only make limited advancement in spiritual life outside of this path. If we want to actually achieve complete success, then we have to come back down.
That's a very good point.
Could you repeat that?
Can you repeat that?
I'd like to suggest that the conclusion might be that one can only make limited advancement outside of this path. And if one wants to attain full success, pure devotional service, he must come within the realm of this
kind. Right, can I read this quote?
Yeah.
This is Prabhupada from the Science of Self-Realization. It says, the process is very simple. Just keep a picture of Lord Chaitanya with his associates. Lord Chaitanya is in the middle, accompanied by his principal associates, Nityananda, Advaita, Gadadhar, and Srivas. One simply has to keep this picture. One can keep it anywhere. It is not that one has to come to us and see this picture. Anyone can have this picture in his home, chant this Hare Krishna mantra, and thus worship Lord Chaitanya. That is the simple method. But who will capture this simple method? Those who have good brains. Without much bother, if one simply keeps a picture of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at home and chants Hare Krishna, then one will realize God. Anyone can adopt this simple method. There is no expenditure, there is no tax, nor is there any need to build a big temple or church. Anyone, anywhere, can sit down on the road or beneath a tree and chant the Hare Krishna mantra and worship God. Therefore, it is a great opportunity. For example, in business or political life, one sometimes finds a great opportunity. Those who are intelligent politicians take a good opportunity and make a success of it the first time it comes. Similarly, in this age, those who have sufficient intelligence take to the Sankirtan movement and advance very quickly.
I'd just like to comment to that. That Lord Chaitanya is there with his associates performing Sankirtan and you're worshipping them and you're chanting Hare Krishna. So if you have any realization at all, particularly that Sankirtan, you realize I have to perform chanting with other devotees. And specifically that's explicitated in that verse of the third class devotee. He worships the Lord, but he doesn't know how to worship or associate with devotees. So yes, you can worship God, but that's third stage. If you want the highest, second, first class stage, you have to associate with devotees. As Prabhupada explicitly,
I think it's what you said is not exactly an answer to his question, but it actually confirms his point. What Rasamandala Prabhu said, that yes, outside people can make advancement, but if somebody wants to make further advancement, and if one wants to attain perfection in spiritual life, then he has to come, he has to become.
So Rasamandala Prabhu is saying it's limited advancement. But then Prabhupada says that there is another place where he says you can become perfect just by, a man can become perfect just by doing his work. Krishna says that in the Gita.
I'll just address this just in 1 minute. Let's consider this question at our hearts. Say we read Prabhupada's books. We are outside. We are karmis. Read Prabhupada's books. Right? Become interested. Get a picture of Panchatattva. Start worshipping. Start chanting. And start getting the joy of, or start experiencing the joy of Krishna consciousness. Then what do we do? We just stay at home and carry on? No, we find out where is the next Hare Krishna temple.
Right.
And go and associate with the devotees.
Right, so supposing that I'm, that taking all that into consideration, that I am that person, and I'm outside, living outside the temple, I have a family, I have 9 kids, and I have a job, I'm completely entangled, you know, I've got all these responsibilities, and I can't just whimsically give them all up just because I want to go.
No one is saying to give up.
I have
to, saying
right.
Associate.
Exactly.
Associate.
Right. So, say for example,
okay, fine. Every Saturday or Sunday, you go to the temple and have to attend the Sunday feast.
Right. Say if I'm living 150 miles away from the
That's
temple.
Why we have to open centers in every town and village.
Can I answer all
and until then, he doesn't make a best.
No, right. Yeah, so what happens until those temples open? So does he make advancement or does he not make advancement?
When he makes sufficient advancement, then he opens a temple. He makes his house into a Hare Krishna temple. Right. At least the Namhat center.
Can I ask all of his questions?
Rasa Prema Prabhu wanted to address something.
Well, this directly answers the question.
Let everybody get a chance.
We should actually encourage everyone to ask.
Yes, I know.
I just wanted to ask you this verse about the Gita. If we define spiritual progress as progress towards Krishna, because spiritual link is Krishna, Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, Yeyat Mamba Padmate Parasatema Bhajamiham, Mamba Vakra Parasatema Vista Parasatama. So everyone who's in, everyone follows my path. So according to their surrender, I reward them. But is it not that? Because actually, when I proposed this topic for discussion, I specifically addressed Shraddha for the first steps of developing this progress in spiritual life. I didn't really meant to, I didn't expect that you would address the second or let us say, and someone already has to understand what happens after. My personal concern when I was raising this topic is the way we approach other people before they join. We often say, you know, whatever you have known is no value. Know that you have met the devotees, you at least finally do spiritual progress. But Shraddha, seemingly, it is possible to have Shraddha and thus to receive mercy of Krishna even through ways which are not linked with Srila Prabhupada's teachings and way of life, because people who are coming to ISKCON already have Shraddha from somewhere, which is a spiritual symptom. And that was my... because I felt actually hurt that in the way we have been approaching people who manifest something that can be a good base for expansion, and rather than finding that, we have been smashing it or destroying it or not considering it. And I mean, it seems to me that that it is possible, but limited seems to be a very, at least it's pacifying my heart to hear that.
Yeah, I think Vasudevananda Prabhu addressed that point. His answer was very appropriate. Like, yes, one can make advancement to some extent. And actually, the cycle of the jivas traveling in this universe is a gradual progress. A living entity is gradually making progress, and that is a spiritual progress. Even the spiritual evolution is actually a spiritual progress, getting more and more conscious body. And when it comes to the human platform, then he actually gets a chance to become directly involved in Krishna consciousness. And then when he begins to make, you know, further progress, then finally, our point is that finally one has to take shelter of Mahaprabhu's movement. Mm-hmm. Because that is the Jiva Dharma. So, and Mahaprabhu's movement has become most wonderfully manifest today through the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Mother Arjuna?
Well, if two different people read Dharma books, one will be so struck by it and will so much confirm the only reason he becomes a devotee, the other will not be able to grab anything. So it means that one may be so spiritual by attention already and the other not. Otherwise, how can he even understand Dharma's books?
I have a point to make that you said rightly, Mahaprabhu's movement. So this is Mahaprabhu's movement. Now,
provided we actually do Mahaprabhu's will, it will be Mahaprabhu's movement. But we can see that Mahaprabhu can very expertly empower somebody else to do something. Although it is said, Bharata Bhumita Hoyla Manusha Jambajara. You take birth in India, Jamma Sakar Koro Para Upakar. Become perfect and then go out and help others.
Not become perfect, making your life successful. Yeah.
Go out and help others. Okay. Now, the Indians didn't do it. People born in Bharat didn't do it. So he gave the Westerners an opportunity to do it. Now, if we also don't do it properly, he has unlimited potency to empower somebody else to do it. We have to remember this very, very clearly. I think ISKCON means that consciousness. That's what is ISKCON. That consciousness that I am simply a servant of a servant of a servant of Lord Chaitanya, and not become proud, not fall into the tendency of thinking, because people who want to control, the first thing they do is to say, you are different, you are a group separate from others, you are better than others, you're different from others. As soon as you have this division, you begin to control. And that's not Vaishnava philosophy. All other philosophies, even mundane religions, aim at keeping people in ignorance, because if you give people liberation, then you cannot control them anymore. But this was the difference between Mahaprabhu's movement and everybody else, is that he actually gives liberation to his followers, become free.
Sometimes control becomes necessary. Like when Prabhupada told his disciples not to go to other temples. Prabhupada was actually wanting to control, but Prabhupada was controlling so that they do not get deviated. So in spiritual platform also sometimes some control is needed. And as far as some mistakes in the beginning, I would say after Prabhupada left, yes, in ISKCON devotees made some mistakes. But that doesn't mean that ISKCON has completely deviated from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions. And since the devotees of ISKCON are sincere, that's why Mahaprabhu is still blessing them. That's why ISKCON is, in spite of so many difficulties, ISKCON is still flourishing. And especially last year, ISKCON actually came to a point when ISKCON could have broken into pieces. But it's only Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who actually saved ISKCON. So, for that matter, I still very much feel that ISKCON is on the right track, and devotees are learning. Devotees, those who are sincere, they are learning, and gradually we will, gradually ISKCON will become a society that will accommodate the entire universe, or at least the entire earth.
Yeah. Reply to the point that Rasa Mandala Prabhu made. Again, there's some quotes here by Prabhupada which shed a different light on that point. I'll just read it. He says, that there have been no newly initiated devotees from Japan is all right. It doesn't matter whether they are initiated or not. If they are coming in large number, that is the success of our mission. We are not after making initiated members very many. But our concern is that people understand this philosophy in wider circles. Initiated members are for managing the temples and preaching work, but our program is to invite people to our feasts, let them hear our philosophy, and chant and dance. That is the basic principle of our philosophy in preaching work. Then he goes on to say, when you adopt a submissive attitude and chant, realization begins from the tongue. If you can control your tongue for prasad, spiritual food, and make the sound vibration of the holy name, then by surrender of the tongue, you can control all the other senses. If you cannot control your tongue, you cannot control your senses. Taste prasad and become spiritually advanced, then Prabhupada says. You can have this process at your home. Offer vegetarian foods to Krishna, chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and offer obeisances Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha, Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya, Govindaya Namo Namaha. Everyone can offer, and then take the food with friends and chant before the picture of Krishna and lead a pure life. Just see the result. The whole world will become Vaikuntha, where there is no anxiety. So that point that you can only make advancement to a limited degree outside of ISKCON, I don't...
No, I think you got... Rasa Mandala Prabhu's point is not contradicting this concept. Rasa Mandala Prabhu never said... Rasa Mandala Prabhu never said that everybody has to move into the temple.
He said that you can only make limited advancement
outside ISKCON, but then you can become connected to ISKCON and make further advancement. You can stay at home, but you can be a part of ISKCON. No, there is no contradiction in that.
How we are having a picture in our home and chanting the prayers unless we have some connection with ISKCON?
obviously that is our connection.
That is the connection.
And then Prabhupada says submissive attitude. What does submissive attitude mean?
So like the point that he brought up here is very relevant now.
Okay.
Regarding his point also before, when he was saying, well, what if we live 2,000 miles in an igloo in the North Pole, or you have 15 children, or whatever. I mean, family, 15 children, or something. Prabhupada says, anyone who is trying to be aloof from this Krishna consciousness society and yet engaged in Krishna consciousness is living in a great hallucination. So the key point there is, keyword is trying to be aloof. There's one more point.
On that point.
I know, but it's directly in the point. So it's another purport in the...
You're right, all right.
In conjunctions with the Pajetas, and the Supreme Lord is blessing them for their cooperation. So Prabhupada says here, this unity between individual souls is so strong within this material world that even in a society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leading toward material things. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. Prabhupada's talking about the Krishna conscious society. So in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. There is only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, such disagreement is to be taken as spiritual. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstance.
Here, I would like to address one point. I mean, answering practically...
No, I want to point out something you said.
Yeah, so that my point, that what Mara said, going along with what he said, that ISKCON is actually a consciousness, so that's right. But Prabhupada also said that sincerity is not enough. Sincerity is manifested in following the rules and regulations. So therefore, there's also a structure which you submit yourself to, submissiveness, and therefore everything goes on very nicely.
Mine is purely a technical point on your quote. You quoted, it's from Dhruva Maharaj.
Yes.
The beginning of the purpose says that it explains people who want association with pure devotees. Listen. I don't want association of pure devotees, and so unfortunate. That purport refers to people who are very, very advanced in Krishna consciousness. We're not talking about whether people are going to become Mahabhagavas outside ISKCON. We're talking whether people are going to make some advancement outside ISKCON. Whether we're going to give them credit for that advancement. Instead of telling them that until you came here, you made no advancement. Only we are devotees, you're a shmo.
Okay, I mean here... I would.
That's the point.
The one point is, if that association of a pure devotee is available in ISKCON, will you say that you don't want to associate with him?
Of course we want to associate with pure
devotees. You actually say that you don't want to associate with the pure
devotees. Because I'm unfortunate.
The thing is that I think it would be more appropriate to consider that all the members, those who are in ISKCON, they are actually pure devotees. They may be green, but someday they'll become ripe. That's one thing. And here I will also address one issue, that sometimes in the past, some devotees have been hurt. They have been hurt and they have left ISKCON. Now, they have reasons, but now by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, those defects are being rectified. So, now they should try to come back. Like whatever the difficulties were, those difficulties have been taken care of, the things are improving. And on our part, we can also make an endeavor to bring them back, and they should also try to come back. Yes.
When you say that those defects have been rectified, that should mean that whatever damage was done, whoever did the damage went to the person who was damaged and gave full reparation with interest. If that has been done...
Vaishnavas don't actually feel like that. Vaishnavas' attitude is that if somebody comes and begs forgiveness, no matter how gross the offense was, the Vaishnava embraces him and says that, there was no offense.
So the person who's offended feels like that, but the person who offends should go and make reparations with interest.
Anyway, let's not get into the details of, let us try to, create an ISKCON that will accommodate the whole world. That should be our attitude. Like, I admit that in the past we were narrowing it down. We had a lot of misconceptions. Due to our immaturities, we made a lot of mistakes. We not only hurt a lot of devotees, we hurt a lot of outsiders also, those, as Rasaprema Prabhu was saying, like, actually we were very conceited. Sometimes we became very conceited. But now let us realize our mistakes and try to become Vaishnavas and create a society of the Vaishnavas that Prabhupada wanted, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness.
I was just pointing out that many of those devotees who created those offenses are no longer in a position to make any amends because they're no longer in the society either.
Yes, Rasaprema Prabhu.
I'd like to maybe narrate the discussion on another point which I discussed with some devotees here, and you know, they're concerned about that, so maybe that could be practical help also for us to hear. It said that no one can express Krishna consciousness without having been empowered by Krishna. Krishna Shakti Vinayana Itari Paratan. So, how is it possible that persons who officially or not officially have been leaving ISKCON or has been stamped to being out of ISKCON still seem to be strongly preaching, having result, and seem to be considered as being persons who are worthy to be taken shelter if actually they're not empowered to do so.
I couldn't really get the point. I mean,
I want to avoid to be too specific, although some questions were specific with certain persons, but as a general matter, this is in another, it's not anymore joining, it's progressing. So if someone spreads Krishna consciousness, preaches, by preaching makes spiritual progress yourself and you help others to advance. So if someone is not empowered by Krishna, he cannot preach with result, neither can he progress by these preaching activities. So some feel that others who are not officially accepted to be in ISKCON still do preach with result and still do make progress. So I'm just making a point. And it seems that they're not linked with ISKCON, or they've been excommunicated from ISKCON, or they've been leaving ISKCON. But still, it seems that outwardly they're still preaching with some result, and then they're still having followers and some result.
So let's try to bring them into the fold of ISKCON back. If there, you know, there are so many valuable devotees, as I mentioned, that unfortunately they left. Now let's try to bring them back. And those who are favorably disposed, they will come back.
And those who are not, is that the meaning that they will lose?
Actually, sometimes I personally have seen some people, those who were very hurt, very offended, and sometimes those who are very envious, they do not want to come back. So there are reasons. Now those who are very offended, they will come back. But those who are envious, they won't come back.
They will lose their power of preaching.
Yeah, and they will lose their power of preaching. So we have about 10 more minutes. I think we'll conclude at does anybody have any question? No, if you thought, I mean, Krishna never wants anyone to leave the spiritual sky. So Krishna doesn't want anyone to leave his spiritual movement. It is because of Maya that one leaves. So Krishna never wants anyone to leave. So if somebody thinks that it's because of Krishna's desire that I left, will not be the right understanding.
Yeah, yes. Yes, I
know. A couple of examples. I could think of someone who, just because of changing ISKCON attitudes, he finds himself in ISKCON, and he finds himself out of ISKCON, and he finds himself back in ISKCON again. He hadn't done anything different. He just carried on the way he was going. But ISKCON was changing. So he's out, he's in, he's out, he's in. So maybe these people aren't out of ISKCON. Maybe they're in ISKCON.
Right.
Maybe, you know, it's just a question of ISKCON maturing.
Yeah. And they and the sincere
in
ones will
heart,
come back.
In their heart, you know.
Yeah.
I think of
so,
in South America, you know, I feel in his heart, maybe some, we all have, but basically, you know, his heart's, as far as I can see, my two good eyes, you know,
yeah, there is no problem because you see, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, ISKCON will become more and more purified, and those who are sincere, they will come back to ISKCON.
When we say come back, maybe you know, maybe it's not come back. Maybe they don't feel they've left. Some of them
be
feel that ISKCON just sort of
okay.
Left there because
then I'll say that they won't become disassociated from ISKCON.
Right.
I think come back means that they'll recognize, yes, this is pure,
yeah.
This purity is there. When you recognize...
But this is Mahaprabhu's movement.
That's right.
That. Is Bhatti Gopal Prabhu? Yeah.
I can relate.
In ISKCON?
Prabhupada, yes. No. Not that I know that. Prabhupada, as far as I was always convinced, Prabhupada's presumption about ISKCON was that it was Vaikuntha. I don't know if you've already... established that in the discussion. Prabhupada's presumption was that this 24-hour-a-day engagement in Krishna's service is ISKCON. That ISKCON will be like that. And therefore, he remarked on many occasions that the temple, living in these temples, was identical to living in the spiritual world. There's a famous remark that I think is in a letter where he said, we will have another ISKCON there in the spiritual world. Everyone will be. You know, so many occasions where Prabhupada said that. So, as far as I was always convinced, the real thing, in or out, is the willingness or the enthusiasm to be engaged in that kind of 24-hour life, devotional service to Krishna. And unfortunately, perhaps due to immaturity, an institution may confuse the issue. But I can't believe that Prabhupada, on meeting someone, however connected externally, who was engaged in that way, in hearing and chanting and serving Krishna, that Prabhupada wouldn't approve, or that he would think him an outsider. Nor can I imagine anyone who was actually engaged in that way, not enthusiastically receiving the association of other Vaishnavas, wherever they may be situated, who are similarly engaged. Because that is the Vaikuntha atmosphere. It's free from envy. It is free from competition. And it is extremely appreciative. It is full of appreciation for each other's service. Even Srimati Radharani, according to Prabhupada, is able to appreciate the service of even very low devotees. So it always seemed to me that I think when it comes to advancement, perhaps there are two. Perhaps we want to divide that advancement into advancement which is made up to the Dharaja River, and that advancement which is going on eternally in the spiritual world. I think that distinction perhaps should be made. Prabhupada said you will never know a time when you have perfection. You will never be aware of any moment when you think, now I am perfect. So this progress continues permanently, but I think there is a difference between those who are willing and eager to live in Vaikuntha and those who are anxious to live in the material world.
To support his statement, which is very nice, of course there's another purport that I'm trying to say. It's actually, it also goes along with it. It's a very liberal statement, I promise. But there's one example. When Shri first time he met Krishnadas Swami in England, do you know the story?
Right.
Yeah. Of Krishnadas Swami. And first time he met him, Krishnadas was actually initiated with that name from another spiritual master in India, from a Vaishnava Sampradaya in Punjab. So first time he mentioned the Prabhupada, and Krishnadas explained his position. He was initiated Vaishnava Sampradaya, with his history, including his teaching school. So Prabhupada immediately said, so why don't you come join us? And Krishnadas, that time just Krishnadas said, well, how can I leave my group? You're asking me to leave my group. I said, who's saying leave your group? You are Vaishnava, you are preaching Bhagavatam, we are Vaishnava, we are preaching Bhagavatam, so you come join us. Immediately, he said, you take one of the houses here, come in the members. So actually, he accepted Prabhupada's proposal. And actually, before that, he wrote to the spiritual master, saying, there's this one Swami, he's turning Englishmen into Vaishnavas, you know, which is quite surprising for Hindus, because their experience with the British were turning the Hindus into Englishmen. So, and he wrote his guru, and his guru said, if what you're saying is true, he is turning Englishmen into Vaishnavas, then by all means, join him in the British. So he did that. And now he's in this time, preaching very nicely. So, just one very nice purport, which maybe this will finish, even Maharaj will have something to say first. This is from the Puranjana Becomes a Woman in His Next Life, text, chapter 28, canto 4, text 31. Among Vaishnavas, there may be some difference of opinion due to everyone's personal identity. But despite all personal differences, the cult of Krishna consciousness must go on. We can see that under the instructions of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Goswami Maharaj began preaching the Krishna consciousness movement in an organized way within the past 100 years. The disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Goswami Maharaj are all Godbrothers. And although there are some differences of opinion, and although we are not acting conjointly, every one of us is spreading this Krishna consciousness movement according to his own capacity and producing many disciples to spread it all over the world. As far as we are concerned, we have already started the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and many thousands of Europeans and Americans have joined this movement. Indeed, it is spreading like wildfire. The cult of Krishna consciousness, based on the 9 principles of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedam, will never be stopped. It will go on without distinction of caste, creed, color, or country. No one can check it. The people of the world are very much harassed by so-called religious principled swamis, yogis, karmis, and gyanis. But none of these can show the right way to become elevated to the spiritual platform. There are primarily 4 parties spreading devotional service all over the universe. These are the Ramanuja Sampradaya, the Madhva Sampradaya, the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya, and the Nimbarka Sampradaya. The Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, in particular, comes from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All these devotees are spreading this Krishna consciousness movement very widely and giving protection to innocent people who are being so much embarrassed by pseudo-avatars, swamis, yogis, and others.
Vivo.
What's the reference?
This is the 4th canto, 28th verse, 31st verse. It's very liberal state.
So, it was a wonderful, very fruitful discussion, I would say. I'm sure everyone benefited a lot. And it has been clear, at least in my mind, that yes, people can make advancement outside of ISKCON, but at certain state of maturity of their advancement, they will spontaneously aspire to become connected to ISKCON, recognizing that this is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, And so it is his duty to become connected to that movement. And Prabhupada's concept of ISKCON is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And wherever there is the endeavor to spread Krishna consciousness, that is ISKCON. Now, at this point, we may not be linked up with each other. We may not be under one banner as yet. But in due course of time, we will all become united. And it will become the real International Society for Krishna Consciousness that has become manifest on this planet at this age, simply to distribute Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy out of the causeless mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and became manifest by his pure devotee Srila Prabhupada and the acharyas of the past. And we, as the members of this society, our duty is to accommodate everyone who has some sentiment for Krishna consciousness. We should be very sensitive about how we deal with others, especially the outsiders and also insiders. If we want that this movement should embrace everybody, then first of all we have to embrace each other, those who are already in the movement, and those who are displaying some genuine concern for spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. In spite of our differences, we should try to join hands and push on this movement. Actually, differences are Maya. In Vaikuntha, there is unity, harmony. And that's why it is Vaikuntha. That's why there is no anxiety. The anxiety comes out of discord. And in spiritual platform, there should not be any discord. So if there is any discord, we must understand that there is something wrong. Maya is influencing us. And by detecting that, we should try to patch it up as soon as possible and drive Maya out. So thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to the mighty for Krishna consciousness. Drive out that misconception and bring in the proper conception. We have to change it. That's why there is a change. Otherwise there is no change in reality there is no change in conception.
What was the misconception and what was the proper?
Proper conception is that the initiating guru.
Well, first, what is the misconception?
That's what I'm saying. The initiating guru never thinks that he is qualified to initiate. He initiates on behalf of the spiritual master, and he tries to link his disciples with his spiritual master. But somehow or other in ISKCON, we had been, broadcasting that the gurus are everything, and the disciples' only relationship is with the guru, and if they don't approach through the guru, then they cannot approach Krishna. And what to talk about the disciples, even godbrothers, if the godbrothers don't go through the initiating gurus, they can't approach Prabhupada. I mean, that was a very gross misconception produced out of acute false ego. Very, very acute false ego. And I want to be everything. I want to be worshipped. I am everything. I am guru.
So who takes the disciple back to Godhead? The initiating guru or Prabhupada, the founder, acharya, or shiksha guru?
The ultimate link takes the disciple back to Godhead. See, Prabhupada makes it very clear in Nectar of Devotion that in order to go back to Godhead, one has to become attached to some inhabitants of Vrindavan. And so that is how the mellow of the person becomes manifest in his heart. And then either the person who is attached to he comes or he sends his representative. Now, that person, or rather the guru, manifests himself as that person, like this non-different, like the Diksha Guru or Shiksha Guru, whoever one is most attached to. You know, he is the very foundation of his spiritual life, very, you know, the mainstay of his spiritual life. So all the approach that he is making towards the spiritual direction is through him. So that link is always there with the initiating guru or the Shiksha Guru, right? Whoever he is developing his maximum attachment to. But ultimately the mellow will be manifest from the Vrindavan Braj Vas, one of Krishna's associates. Like Prabhupada says that somewhere either one becomes attracted to Nanda Maharaj or Jasoda Mai or Shubal or, you know, some of the gopis or manjaris according to his sarup. And then he is taken by the spiritual master and connected to that group or that individual. And he finds that his guru also belongs to that same group.
So that could be the Diksha Guru or the...
It can, mainly it is the Shiksha Guru actually. Shiksha Guru, because the Shiksha Guru is revealing Krishna in the heart or Vrindavan in the heart. Because through the instructions, Krishna consciousness is, he is receiving the Krishna consciousness.
Can the disciple consider the Diksha Guru to also be his Shiksha Guru?
Generally Diksha Guru is the Shiksha Guru, but sometimes Diksha Guru may not be the Shiksha Guru. Somebody else may be, I mean the ultimate, you know, like where the main personality, like say for instance, in the association of Vaishnava, we are associating with so many Vaishnavas, but out of all these Vaishnavas, we have some very special relationship with someone, right? So in the course of his spiritual advancement, the devotee, he finds somebody who he feels extremely attracted to, and he finds that he is actually giving him Krishna the most. Actually, jai Krishna tattvavetta shei guru hai, example or that explanation that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave is about Shiksha Guru. It's the Shiksha Guru who is Krishna tattvavetta and he is giving Krishna. Krishna se tomar Krishna dite paro, tomaro shakuti ache. So that is the Shiksha Guru. Now, Diksha Guru may be Shiksha Guru or may not be the Shiksha Guru. Like sometimes, you know, Diksha Guru is not the Shiksha Guru. Because, you know, just for the sake of formality, one may take initiation from someone. But later on, he may find that that person is either too busy or doesn't have so much, you know, knowledge about Krishna. And then he comes across somebody, you know, who is very, very Krishna conscious. And he feels drawn towards him. And then, you know, in his heart, he feels that here is my main link with Krishna. He is actually giving me Krishna. So that he becomes the main personality who actually links him up with Krishna.
Maharaj, in such a case where that happens, where so the Shiksha Guru turns out to be different. So, how can we avoid the phenomenon that has happened since Srila Prabhupada's departure, where some of our godbrothers have thought, oh yes, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers is acting, even Srila Prabhupada's Shiksha Guru. So, and he's more elevated than Srila Prabhupada.
Well, the thing is, first of all, did Prabhupada say that he is the Shiksha Guru to begin with? Who is there to decide who is Prabhupada's Shiksha Guru? Prabhupada himself or these disciples of Prabhupada? Who will decide who is Prabhupada's Shiksha Guru?
The fact that he happens to be Srila Prabhupada's, well, so-called Shiksha Guru is just consequential. The real point is that, like you mentioned, I have the diksha from Srila Prabhupada, but I feel there's someone else who can give me higher knowledge. In fact, even Prabhupada's presence, the devotee's doing that.
Well, I mean, if...
And
I mean,
asking Prabhupada for permission, and that's been his incident, asking Prabhupada...
Anyway, I mean, it's again going back to yesterday's discussion. I mean, we came to the conclusion that there is no question of advance freely. Then the atmosphere in our society will become much better. You know, instead of saying that, no, only me that you have a relationship with, nobody else. I mean, that person is very, very cruel and very conceited. But on the other hand, you know, like it's a family, so develop, you know, like you have your uncles, you have your cousins and, you know, sort of, or you have your grandfather, so develop your relationship, go. I mean, if you don't like, you know, sometimes, you know, children feel fed up with the father, right? And then what he does, he goes to the uncle and takes shelter, or goes to the grandfather and takes shelter. And Prabhupada himself gave that example. When Prabhupada's health was bad, and devotees were very, very, very much in anxiety, they were crying, and Prabhupada assured them, don't worry. If I go, don't worry. Your grandfather is there, he'll take care of you. That's Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur will take care of you. So that is the right understanding, at least according to my conclusions. I mean, we are talking about spiritual life, eternal life. We are talking about eternal personalities. So how can we ever think that he is dead and gone? I mean, that is completely detrimental to what Prabhupada taught us. The person who taught us, na jayate mriyate va kadachin, we are saying that, well, he is gone and dead. He is no more here and he has nothing to do with you all.
Well, I remember when I took initiation, there was like three requests that were three stipulations for receiving initiation. One, that you accept spiritual master as great as God. Second one is that you agree to follow his instructions. And the third one is that you accept him as your eternal father. So, assuming you espouse universal, which your guru is supposed to take you back to Godhead. So you make this vow, and then in the course of time you feel, well, actually, there's somebody else who is more qualified, or I feel more...
Here you have to see, now let us consider, I mean, don't just derive some conclusions based on some misconceptions. That's my point, right? Let us consider what's going to happen now. Let's forget about what happened in the past. Let us consider what ISKCON is trying to actually establish, what principle. Now, there won't be any propaganda for, you know, attracting disciples. Gurus can't go and, you know, broadcast or, you know, sort of bribe or publicize or politic, right? It is up to the disciples who they want to take initiation from. It doesn't even have to be from the same area. Or there's no zonal guru business now, right? The devotees are open to choose their spiritual master, right? And no hurry, no rush. Take your time, right?
So,
no, I'm saying that is the policy that ISKCON is taking. No hurry, right? And then you see, when a person selects a spiritual master, he actually feels that here is a person who is going to help me in spiritual life. Of all the Vaishnavas that I have met, this person seems to be most appealing to me. It seems that he is most capable of guiding me in my spiritual life. So naturally, the relationship is based on Shraddha. Right? Some faith is there. But now, say, in course of his advancement, he may feel very attracted to somebody else. Now, then, if that happens, the guru, the Diksha guru, should not tell him that, look, you have only relationship, you have taken initiation from me and you don't have anything to do with anybody else. You are my personal property. I gave you a stamp, rubber stamp. No, that doesn't work any longer. At least, you know, theoretically. Like, devotees are open to take help from anybody. And any devotee in good standing can guide the devotees towards their spiritual life. And it happened in the past. It happened in the past, like the gurus, somebody else became the Shiksha Guru, the main link has been with him. And sometimes Guru's disciple became a very close friend of Guru's godbrother. Example is Ramchandra Kaviraj and Narottam Das Thakur. Ramchandra Kaviraj was initiated disciple of Srinivas Thakur, and Srinivas Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur are godbrothers. But Ramchandra Kaviraj and Narottam Das Thakur were very, very intimate friends. Like now, Ramachandra Sangha Magi Narottama Das. So, I mean, spiritual life is a spontaneous, a field of spontaneous development. So let us make room for that spontaneous development. And give up all this narrow-mindedness. We have seen that this narrow-mindedness has caused a lot of damage to the society, and destroyed many people's spiritual life. So now let us have a healthy growth. If the intentions are good, everything will be all right. Yes.
Maharaj, could I just ask one question? Would, if a disciple felt more attracted to another devotee, would he have to get his spiritual master's permission?
It is the custom was something like that. Mm-hmm. That usually he takes the Diksha Guru's permission, Yeah, he can take the permission of his Diksha Guru. If the Diksha Guru is in good standing, that here is a person I want to take guidance from him, is it all right? And if the Diksha Guru is a gentleman, and if he thinks that the person is in good standing, then he'll say, yes, go, take advice, take instruction. And it was happening all the time in Mahaprabhu's time and in his line. Like when Shyamananda Prabhu was actually a disciple of Hriday Chaitanya Prabhu, right? And Hriday Chaitanya Prabhu sent him to Jiva Goswami. Go take instructions from him. So he sent him to Vrindavan. So there was a lot of exchanges like that. Go get trained up from this person. He's a very elevated devotee. So if we allow devotees to grow naturally, then there will be a lot of exchanges like that.
Sometimes someone may say that the relationship is one of kind of chastity, almost like a wife to a husband. So it may seem as if it's being a little unchaste.
Well, the thing is that in Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya, each Sampradaya is a family, right? If the son becomes attracted to the uncle, then is he becoming a prostitute?
Therefore, it's never wife husband. It's always father son.
Right, it's a father son relationship.
I must have misconception.
Right. Yeah, it cannot be. I mean, it's not. That's a good point. Actually, it's not a husband wife relationship. Only two of them and nobody else.
Right.
I mean, that's a very.
There is also an example in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Raghunath Das Goswami was initiated by Jadunandan Acharya, who was a disciple of Gadara Pandit, who was an intimate associate of Haridas Thakur, who was qualified in every way. But still, Raghunath became connected with Nityananda Prabhu, got his blessing, he ran away from his own guru, he ran away, didn't tell him he was going, he ran away, went to Jagannath Puri. Later on he writes that glorifying Swarup Damodar Goswami for actually forcing him to drink the bitter cup of renunciation. So he glorifies Swarup Damodar Goswami as his guru. So there is an example.
And when we draw the line as Rupa Goswami to Raghunath Das Goswami. There is no such link. Actually, if you take the Diksha link, it's with Jadunandan Acharya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu surrendered him to offered him to Swarup Damodar.
And
Swarupe Raghunath. But our line is we are drawing the line with Rupa Goswami. Why? Because he got the maximum amount of Krishna consciousness from Rupa Goswami. So wherever you find the link that is, you know, giving you the nectar, that is the line.
So the diksha is just to connect you with the family, if you like. And once you
in ISKCON especially.
Because one may therefore ask, what is the need, if shiksha is the important thing, what is the need for diksha in that case?
No, diksha is important for introduction.
Mm.
You get initiated.
Initiated into the family, as it were.
To the family, yeah, to the spiritual life.
And it's an injunction of the shastra.
I know, but I was asking why it's an injunction of the shastra. Because obviously in the injunction of the shastra there's a good
has
reason.
A meaning, yeah.
There's a reason for it.
So we are actually today we are having a little different kind of darshan. Today's Prabhupada darshan. So we are asking them to tell about their realization of Prabhupada.
Tell Prabhupada stories, sir.
Let us have their realization, then maybe we can get into that. Parmeshwar, it's your turn now.
When I first read the book of Sarvabhata, I was very impressed by the description here, because the descriptions make me realize that God has I was always looking for something spiritual. So when I read this book, I was really convinced about the existence of God. Because it was something which was experienced by my spiritual prophet himself. So he could give this to us.
Which book did you read?
Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. You want to say some pastimes of Prabhupada?
No, let's just go on like this. Later.
Actually, I just saw that it's 8 o'clock now. We have only half an hour. And anyway, so maybe now we can have
I
some...
I just heard a nice story
in
Amsterdam.
Yeah?
When I was in Amsterdam last week, I was meeting with one of my godbrothers who joined very early. And he told me a Prabhupada story. It was very sweet. And it's not known by anybody. I've never heard it before. I don't think even you know the story. And it was in the early 70s, we had a temple then in Parthenostraat, in kind of the lower end of Amsterdam. And Akoyananda was the president, Akoyananda Maharaj. Prabhupada came with his secretaries and they were going to install the deities of Lord Jagannath. So when he came, nothing had been arranged properly. Akoyananda was notorious being a forgetful type of person, so he never arranged all the details. Prabhupada was trying to perform the sacrifice and there was no fruit, no incense, no flowers. So Prabhupada was becoming a little angry at the devotees and he was chastising them. So while he was chastising them, the temple room was very small and there were many guests there lining against the walls. The place was full, you couldn't move.
Explain how they bring the fruit salad.
Yes. So first of all, there was nothing there. So he said, there's no flowers, and then he said, there's no fruit. And as he said, there's no fruit, Kishori walked in with a tray full of, a bowl full of fruit salad. She was told we need fruits, so she made fruit salad. Prabhupada saw this and became totally disgusted. And he more chastised. And at that time, there was one of the guests who was standing against the wall about 10 feet away. And he'd been living in a temple before as a bhakta, but he wasn't so sure about his commitment and he had left. But he had learned in the temple that whenever there was an argument with devotees, a third devotee would come and say, just chant Hare Krishna and forget it. So that he knew that much. So, realized that much. So he was watching Prabhupada directing operations and chastising everyone who was coming within his range. So when he chastised about the fruit salad, he leant over and he said, "Just chant Hare Krishna." So Prabhupada looked up, looked at him, he thought about it for a second or two, and he picked up his bead bag and he began to chant Hare Krishna.
Yeah, that's the sign of a pure devotee. He takes every instruction as Krishna. Brahmananda Prabhu, you, now it's your turn to open the nectar pot. I don't know whether you all know, or all of you know, that Brahmananda Prabhu is actually one of the first devotees that came forward to help Srila Prabhupada when Prabhupada was alone. Of course, Prabhupada was never alone. Krishna was always with him. But when Prabhupada went to New York and opened his place in 26th Second Avenue, Brahmananda Prabhu was one of the first persons who came to help Prabhupada. Like, and he helped Prabhupada so much that once I heard myself Prabhupada tell about Brahmananda Prabhu. It was in Mayapur. There was an old Ayurvedic Kaviraj who was a friend of Prabhupada. He came to treat Srila Prabhupada, hearing that Prabhupada was sick. So this man was 92 years old at that time, and he was blind. But he used to be one of the best Kavirajas in India at one time. Very, very expert. So at that time I was taking care of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada also wanted me to take care of that person. His name is Bimalananda Tarkatirtha. He was also a member of parliament. And so in the morning at about 8:30, I used to take the doctor to Prabhupada's room. They were on the same floor, you know, 3-4 rooms away from Prabhupada's room he was staying. So I used to take him to Prabhupada's room, and he used to check Prabhupada, prescribe medicines, and then both of them would sit down and talk. So those days, Brahmananda Prabhu was Prabhupada's secretary. And I was sitting down with Prabhupada and Vimalananda Tarkati, so they were talking about various things. And so Brahmananda Prabhu came to Prabhupada's room, had to say something, or then he went away. So Prabhupada started telling Vimalananda Tarkatirtha. He was actually telling him how he spread Krishna consciousness in the West. And he was telling that how devotees came forward, how these young American boys and girls came forward to help Prabhupada spread Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement there. And then after Brahmananda Prabhu left the room, Prabhupada started telling Bimalananda Tarkatirtha that this boy, he is the son of a millionaire. He is the son of a millionaire, very rich. But after he came and met me, he gave up his father and he moved into my place. And he took up a very simple job of a school teacher. He used to, and at the end of the week, whatever he used to get, he used to just bring and offer it to me. And while saying that, Prabhupada, tears streamed down Prabhupada's eyes. So this is how Brahmananda Prabhu helped Srila Prabhupada those days, and Prabhupada always recognized the devotees who helped him in spreading Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. So Brahmananda Prabhu is a very, very senior devotee, and he received a lot of mercy from Srila Prabhupada. Now we want to hear from you, Brahmananda Prabhu. I didn't want to choke you up.
Actually, the first.
I didn't immediately begin living in the storefront. I had my apartment, which was very near to Prabhupada's storefront. His storefront was between 1st and 2nd Street. I was living on 6th Street. Umapati was living on 5th Street. And Satsarup was living on... he was also living, I think, on 3rd Street. Yeah, 3rd Street. So, Prabhupada used to, when he used to speak, after he used to give lecture in the evening, which was three evenings a week, then he would bring two apples, and then he would cut the apple into pieces, and then put them in a bowl, and then the devotee would come and take the apple and give everyone a piece. And then he had a basket, and then he would pass the basket, and everyone would get the basket and put some money in it and pass it on. So everyone would give, mainly it was change. This is how Prabhupada was maintaining. He would collect $2-3, maybe sometimes $5. Rarely would someone put a dollar bill in. And then when the basket would come back to Prabhupada, then he would take everything and empty the basket right on his table, and then he would count it. And especially for the hippies, and I mean, this is the most unspiritual thing. Yes. A holy man to count the collection. But Prabhupada would do everything very methodically. And so once I, to make a game, when the basket came to me, I put $100 bill. And in those days, $100 bill was, that was the rent, the entire rent of the store for 1 month. So then the basket came back to Prabhupada, and he dumped it and started counting, and there were a couple other bills. And then he saw the $100 bill. And he lit up and... then looked around to try to see. So of course I started smiling, and Prabhupada smiled to me.
I'll tell one story that I heard from Ramananda Prabhu. So earlier in the days, Ramananda Prabhu used to go to Prabhupada quite often. But he tried, one day he wanted to impress Prabhupada. So he took a Bhagavad Gita that he used to read. And so he went and told Prabhupada. I think this was the first or second or third visit.
So oh, said, yeah.
Swamiji, I also read Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada said, oh, it's very good. So he said, and he showed him Bhagavad Gita. So it was very good. So he opened a page. So he opened a page. He said, read it. So he read it along. The Prabhupada said, now close the book. And tell me what you understood. And Ramananda Prabhu realized that he didn't understand anything from the page.
No one could. The way they written, right. You can't understand what they're
and
saying.
And that's the thing, like, besides Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is,
none of his Bhagavad Gita is making sense.
Because the people writing are very confused. I don't know what's what.
And they're expert also. Prabhupada said they're very expert in writing in such a way that you don't know what they're saying, and therefore you think that it's very spiritual. Thus, spiritual life means to not know anything.
Everything is vague.
Yeah. Well, that's what impressed us with Prabhupada, that he established Krishna as in the Bhagavad Gita. I had was reading one. In fact, I was carrying one Bhagavad Gita with me wherever I went, even before meeting Prabhupada. But I was reading, and I always thought that Krishna was just a mythological figure. And we never thought that there was Krishna existed, I mean, it was real. So, what could you possibly understand of Bhagavad Gita if you don't understand Krishna? But that's the way they've written Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada establishes Krishna on every page, every purport. So it's the most unique presentation of Bhagavad Gita. I don't think there's any other Bhagavad Gita that establishes Krishna.
We want to hear some more.
And Prabhupada used to, sometimes we used to come into Prabhupada's room and see him reading. The Krishna book especially was his favorite. And he would be reading for his own entertainment and pleasure. And sometimes he would remark to us how wonderful this book is. he was just appreciative of the book as we would be. As if he wasn't the author of the book. And he was just reading this book. Once I came in and he was reading and he just started saying, "Wonderful Krishna, wonderful Krishna, wonderful Krishna." And that's one of the titles of the one of the chapters. And Prabhupada just completely loved Krishna. And that was so evident in everything he did and said. He wasn't trying to be Krishna conscious. I mean, he was Krishna conscious. And I think that is the major difference between us and him. And for us to try to elevate ourselves or to receive any kind of, or to imitate Prabhupada is just completely foolish. Because we don't know Krishna. Hardly we even know Prabhupada, but Prabhupada knew Krishna. And sometimes he would ask us, he would look deep into your eyes and ask you, "Now, are you convinced?" And he would say it in such a way that you immediately felt you would hang your head. I don't think there was anyone who Prabhupada did that to, but say yes. Prabhupada would do it in such a way that all the doubts and all the ignorance would just be immediately exposed. But that just to be in Prabhupada's presence, he just exposed all of your therefore, you felt completely confident that Prabhupada could take you to Krishna. There was no doubt about it. Therefore, Prabhupada was so potent.
I always feel very ashamed that I never had any personal association with Srila Prabhupada. I think what impressed me most of all when I read Srila Prabhupada's books was his honesty in writing. We felt here is a man who's completely innocent. There's an innocence and an honesty to that writing. So I got a couple of books. I read Isha Upanishad and Easy Journey to Other Planets. And I think Krishna Consciousness, the Topmost Yoga System. And I also got a pamphlet. I remember reading The Obeisances, Namo Vishnupadaya. And at that time, for some reason, I got down and paid my obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. I don't exactly know why. So later on, I met the devotees. And I always imagined sitting at Srila Prabhupada's feet and studying from him. But some or other, I've always felt very dirty before Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada, when he looked at you, then he could see right through to your heart. So it was, I remember, actually, Prabhupada only ever said one thing to me. At Bhaktivedanta Manor, the temple commander asked me to go, and I'd been there about a week or something. And that was when Srila Prabhupada came to install Shishi Radha Gokulananda. Actually, I went to the temple. On the, I said I was going to help with the temple room, actually. Actually, I was thinking of joining, but I thought if I said I want to come and join you, then they would say, no, you're not qualified. So then they said, the devotees said they wanted people to help on the temple room. So it was just before the installation of Shishi Radha Gokulananda. So Prabhupada was there, and the temple commander asked me to pick up rubbish from the driveway in front of the manor. So I was in my kami clothes. I don't think I'd shaved up by then. And they told me Prabhupada had gone out. So I thought Prabhupada had gone out in the car. But I was picking up the pieces of paper when suddenly Prabhupada came round the corner with all the devotees. So I was a little bit terrified. I paid my obeisances and got up, and then Prabhupada was still a long, long way away. And as he came past, he just looked and said, "Jai." So I didn't know what that meant. So I went and asked one devotee, and he said, that means victory. So I always took that one word that Srila Prabhupada had said to me, that even though I'm so fallen, never had Srila Prabhupada's, I was never spoke to him personally, that one day I might become pure enough to have his association. And it was interesting, in Vrindavan, we were reading from the chapter, The Disappearance of Krishna, and how Arjuna was lamenting for Krishna's departure from the planet, and how he was actually very dejected. And then how, by remembering the Lord's instructions, then all the trash in his mind was washed away. And it's explained therein by Srila Prabhupada how we can associate with the Lord personally or through his instructions, and how there's no difference. So I was wondering how it is that Arjuna was actually still dejected, even though Krishna not really left. So I was meditating on how actually Arjuna's lamentation became an impetus for him to remember Krishna's instructions. And I was thinking how also, although Srila Prabhupada has not left us, we'll always somehow feel in our hearts very sad that he has left us. But somehow that will become an impetus for us to actually take his instructions to heart, so that one day we can again have his association. So I still feel that very strongly, that because of my own nature, that I didn't associate with Srila Prabhupada. So that is sometimes hard, but I feel that if we study Srila Prabhupada's books and associate with him through his books, then we can again associate with Srila Prabhupada directly. Srila Prabhupada ki.
In the old Brooklyn temple. And Pop. No, no, that was Henry's doing. So every year Prabhupada would come through once. So I saw Prabhupada total 8-10 occasions. And, well, personally, I had no personal exchange with Srila Prabhupada. Of course, any contact with the spiritual master is very personal, even though it may not be exactly personal. And I would just like to reinforce Ramananda's statement that, and also Rasamandala's statement, that whenever Prabhupada just would put his glance at you, towards you, and just look at you, then it would be like X-ray vision. And immediately, actually Prabhupada wouldn't even have to say anything to you, just look at you, immediately you just be exposed and feel very ashamed and contaminated. So, there's one occasion Prabhupada was giving a Sunday feast lecture in New York, in Brooklyn Temple. And there were many Indians always came to the temple. I can't remember exactly the lecture. It was standard philosophy. Of course, that's in Prabhupada's books. And then one lady asked a question which was completely irrelevant. And she said, Swamiji, she's very affectionately, very enthusiastic, please tell us about Rasalila. Rasalila, please tell us about Rasalila. So, Prabhupada, of course, said there are 10 cantos in Srimad Bhagavatam. The 10th canto is about Krishna's intimate pastimes. Before that, there are 9 other cantos which you must first go through. So, I was impressed how Prabhupada said exactly what was in his books. And how he didn't cater to this woman's sentimental expression about Krishna. But he was also very gentle, also with her. But, and in this realization of that Prabhupada, what he said was in his books, this was the universal realization gotten by all the devotees. Most of us didn't have any personal connection with Srila Prabhupada, personal dealings such as Ramananda and others had. But our overwhelming realization was that Prabhupada is in his books. That in Prabhupada we are hearing and giving class and speaking and acting. Everything is there in his books. That was the overwhelming realization. So it just confirmed in our minds the necessity of reading his books and associating with him through his books and following his books. And that was the same, just as good as any personal association with him. So I just like to say that we can always remember that, whatever our position is, how many generations down the line we are, we all can have direct association with Srila Prabhupada in the most intimate way through his books. And that was also explained that Prabhupada, when he translated his books, no one could come in, no one could bother him. He was all alone, the best hours of the morning, Brahma Muhurta between 2 and 4 in the morning, translating, and no one could come in and bother him. It was sacrosanct when Prabhupada was translating. So whoever is reading Prabhupada's books is associating with Srila Prabhupada in his most intimate, most profound and concentrated moments. So, and as Prabhupada says, these purports are my spiritual ecstasies. So,
sometimes the secretary, the typist, would not. Sometimes Prabhupada would produce very little.
Consider that Prabhupada had to produce a certain amount, and he said something to the effect, I'm not a machine that I can just do. It takes a great deal of thought to write a purport. These purports, they're very deep, very very concentrated. Prabhupada never did it mechanically. It wasn't a burden or a chore to write his books. It was very his most intimate. I would say his most intimate service to Krishna was his presentation.
And Prabhupada makes that point of including words in the Chaitanya that more important than the body, more important than the Bhagavad Gita.
So the fact is that those devotees who
those devotees that have learned to associate with Prabhupada in his books and follow those instructions, they are with us now and they'll become eternal. And those devotees who had the greatest amount of personal association but were unable to grasp Prabhupada, the essence of Prabhupada in his books, they are no longer, they couldn't make it to the Prince Sabha. So we should all be very confident, completely confident, that we have everything in Prabhupada's books.
Does anyone want to speak anything on Prabhupada? Anyone feel like saying anything?
Could I ask Brahman Prabhu one question? Prabhu, you knew Srila Prabhupada very well, so do you think he would like what we're doing here and what we're doing in Vrindavan in the form of these study courses? Is this what Srila Prabhupada wanted? Because some devotees have criticized this systematic training.
On what basis?
I've heard it criticized in Vrindavan because it's kind of centralized and...
Centralized?
That's what I've heard one devotee saying, that, you know, because devotees were coming from all around the world to study there, and that wasn't necessary. We should just study in our own temples.
Prabhupada many times? Well, yeah, okay. And study in your own temples. Mm. Okay, you're studying, so it's in Vrindavan.
Vrindavan is our own temple.
This is when I before I joined, I always I guess it's a personal thing, but I always wanted to be very much trained.
If you don't want to come to Vrindavan, we're not forcing you.
I like to come to Vrindavan, but when I really wanted to be trained when I came to devotee, I think.
Training is the essential thing, Prabhupada. Many times referred to institutions and training and degrees, diplomas, titles. Mm. You can see this in the Lamrita. It's very evident. So that means a systematized procedure. Examinations, Prabhupada himself made the first examination, and all of